Good morning and welcome. I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in today for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Rose will be back on Friday in time for the Media Roundtable, and in the meantime, we're going to talk elections. I can't imagine a time when there was more anticipation in terms of the outcome of an election here in California. Last night, California voters finally had a chance to head to the polls to vote for a presidential candidate, to cast their ballots on statewide and local offices, and one ballot initiative as well. This year, all eyes were on the race between presidential hopefuls Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. Last night, Hillary Clinton made history. She won the delegate-rich primary by 63% here in California, clinching the nomination, as far as we can tell, for the Democrats. A record 17.9 million people, or 72% of eligible people in California, registered to vote for the state and presidential primary elections. And then there were the legislative races that included Senator Barbara Boxer's Senate seat, 53 U.S. House of Representatives seats, California State Senate and State Assembly seats were up for grabs, and of course State Proposition 50, along with numerous local propositions. So voters had a lot of things to consider. So what do the results of the state races say about the future of California? How do we begin to interpret the Democratic presidential primary result? And today we've got two veteran writers to discuss that. We're joined from Sacramento by phone with Dan Walters. He's a columnist with the Sacramento Bee and an expert on California politics. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you.
And here in the studio with me is Tim Redmond. You know him as the former editor of the Bay Guardian and founder and editor of 48 Hill, Hills, an online nonprofit San Francisco progressive source for news and culture. So, Tim, welcome back to the program.
Happy to be here.
And, of course, we certainly want to hear from you. I imagine at water coolers around the state, everybody's talking about the results of last night's elections. What do you think about the Democratic primary result? Who did you vote for, and how did you vote in your local propositions and races? Did you have any surprises? We hope you'll join the conversation. The number is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. And, of course, you can email us, feedback@yourcallradio.org, or you can leave your comments on the website. That's www.yourcallradio.org. The phones are already lighting up. I can only imagine that people are just anxious to have their voices heard, certainly for the first time in the history of California since I've lived here in the last 25 or 30 years. California actually mattered. So, Tim, how did California impact this race?
Well, actually, it's interesting. California actually mattered in theory. What actually happened, and it was a surprise to a lot of us, is on Monday, the day before the election, the Associated Press reported that Hillary Clinton had already won. And about an hour before the polls closed in California, when people who'd been working all day got home and were maybe getting ready to go and vote, Hillary Clinton announced that she was the winner and that she was going to be the presidential nominee. And, you know, I was listening to a couple of radio shows this morning where people were calling in and saying, one woman called in and said, well, my mom decided not to vote because she was told that the whole thing was over. So I think in an odd way that we had huge expectations of turnout. I have not seen the final figures, but I think there were a lot of people who said, it was over on Monday. Why bother to go out and vote? And I think that really, that's one of the reasons I think that the Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton vote was so lopsided. I think that if the Bernie supporters thought yesterday that he still had a chance of winning and that it wasn't over, more of them might have come to the polls. That, of course, and you know, the problem with all of these early predictions and saying, oh, the race is over, it doesn't matter, the problem with that is it affects down ballot issues. I mean, it's not just people were not just voting in a presidential primary. They were also voting for a state senate, state assembly. In San Francisco, there were several really key local races. And, you know, the frustrating thing for a lot of us is to see somebody announce victory or AP crown a victor before people even have a chance to vote in California, which then affects those races.
Dan, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that there was an impact from the AP story? Did that impact voter turnout? And how do you even begin to measure that impact?
You cannot measure it except by further polling, but it probably had an impact. How big an impact? It's hard to say. The pre-election estimate by the field poll, and they were the only ones making those kind of estimates, was that about 45% of registered voters would vote in this election. There's still a lot of ballots out there to be counted, maybe a million or so, but just some kind of back-of-the-envelope numbers that indicate that maybe the turnout was closer to 40% rather than 45%. Now, whether that can be ascribed to the early announcement, if you will, by the AP and the early claim by Hillary Clinton, you know, it has some effect, but how big, it's difficult to say. And the question is, even if it does have an effect on turnout, did it really impact any of the down ballot races in a significant way? And again, it's something that you can only speculate of, but clearly if there was something that was really, really, really close, then maybe it did. But certainly in the major races that were going on, like the U.S. Senate thing, they weren't really, really, really close, so they probably had no effect on that, nor on the one ballot measure that was statewide. That passed handily. Nor, I might add, on local ballot measures. There were 89 local government and school district tax and bond measures on the ballot this week. And 70 of them passed, and several others are pending. And that's historically speaking, that's a pretty strong passage rate for the local bonds and taxes. So I don't think it made much effect on that realm of, well, you'd have to go way down and deep and look at county supervisors' races maybe and some of the legislative races to see if they had impact. But you also have to remember something we kind of tend to forget sometimes. This is only a primary. This is not the general election. Nobody won yesterday except for Hillary Clinton, I guess, in Donald Trump, because he won in California, too. Well, everything else is just preliminary. Kamala Harris didn't win her Senate seat. She merely got a place in the November runoff with Loretta Sanchez, and that's true of every legislative and congressional seat that's up this year. Nothing was won yesterday. It was all just preliminary to what happens in November.
Well, arguably, Bernie Sanders was counting on California to justify continuing in the race and certainly going into the convention with some momentum and some leverage. And perhaps the lower turnout did impact his voters. Do you think that's a possibility?
It's a possibility, but all of his voters tend to be pretty enthusiastic. But if it were very, very close in California, as the pre-election polls indicated it might be, some of them anyway, then you could say yes. But the final polls just before the election indicated that it probably wasn't going to be the 2% race that we were talking about before, but more like a 10% or 12% margin, and that's more or less how it turned out. So I think the argument that somehow Bernie Sanders was doomed by a low turnout, it might be comforting to the Sanders people. I don't think it's really... it's really probably not true.
Let's talk about the free-floating angst that's happening all over the country as a result of this election. Tim and I were talking about this election being unprecedented on so many levels. Of course, the fact that there is a woman heading a ticket for the first time in our country's history, and the fact that we had to wait so long is shocking in and of itself. But, you know, Tim, we were talking about the nature of this election, and last night seemed to have all of the elements kind of rolled in there. Donald Trump on a teleprompter, staying on script perhaps for a change, except for saying PPP instead of TPP. the one time he ventured off the prompter, he kind of got it wrong. But we might be seeing another approach from him. Certainly Hillary Clinton is embracing the fact that she is, in fact, making history as the first woman to lead a ticket, something that she didn't do in her prior race in 2008. So just talk about the nature of this election going forward between now and November. What can we expect to see?
Well, the other historic thing that you didn't mention is it has been a very, very long time in this country since somebody who identified as a democratic socialist came as close as Bernie Sanders did. So on every level, there were a lot of unprecedented things in this election. I mean, who would have thought a year ago that Donald Trump would be the nominee of a major party in the United States of America? Who would have thought that Bernie Sanders, you know, the rumpled 70-year-old senator from Vermont who's a socialist, would have been very, very close to winning the nomination in the Democratic Party? So it's, you know, I think it's very clear that there's a lot of unhappy voters out there. There's a lot of people on both sides, on the Republican side and on the Democratic side, who think the system is rigged against them, and who think that our electoral system is skewed towards the very wealthy and the so-called special interests, and who feel that the economy isn't working for them. I mean, we have, you know, as Robert Reich likes to point out, you know, in the past 20 years, the size of the U.S. economy has doubled, and 100% of that new wealth has gone to the 1%. And, you know, Sanders did a good job of picking up on that. I think there are also some Trump voters who, in their Republican way, picked up on that, too. There's a lot of unhappy working class Republicans out there. So it's going to be it's also going to be an interesting election, because I can't think of a time when the two major party candidates went into the general election with such high negatives. I mean, basically, a significant percentage of the population doesn't like either of them. So that's, you know, it's going to be, for a lot of people, this is going to be a lesser of two evils election. And, you know, again, that's unusual. It's unusual that at this point in the election, both candidates are in that situation.
Well, Dan, I'm wondering how significant it is that Bernie Sanders' tone last night was certainly not combative. He congratulated Hillary Clinton on her win, but he also made it very clear that he is not dropping out. Of course, D.C. still has their elections next week, but he also requested a meeting with the president. So he'll be meeting in the White House tomorrow along with the Democratic leader, Harry Reid, and wouldn't you like to be a fly on the wall in that meeting? What do you think is going to be going on? What kind of discussion will that be?
Well, the whole notion now is they've got to figure, and I say they, I mean the Democratic Party, has to figure out a way of for Bernie Sanders to exit gracefully and not vindictively, in a way that they can kind of pull together between now and convention time, so that it's not a raucous sort of convention. It certainly wouldn't be like 1968, but something that shows dissonance within the party, and that'll be a little tricky. And you know, what does Bernie want, so to speak? What does it take to get him to kind of come on board? I think there's going to be a lot of that kind of stuff going on. Maybe some platform planks or some appointments, or who knows what it'll be. But I want to go back to something Tim said about having two candidates with such high negatives. Yes, this is a country that has a lot of angst now, a lot of really, I don't know whether it's fear, apprehension, resentment, whatever it is. And then you have, on top of that, rather than having candidates who might appeal to our better nature, so to speak, we have a couple of candidates who are both highly flawed, and both have extremely high negatives, and that's what you put those two things together, the candidates and the conditions, you have the recipe for a campaign that will be personal invective from day one. I think you saw that last night with Hillary Clinton starting to attack Donald Trump. Certainly Trump has been on the attack and calling her Crooked Hillary or something like that. This is going to be personal. It's not going to be about issues. There aren't going to be any issues. This is going to be strictly personal. Who do you like the most, or who do you hate the most, and try to put together some sort of combination that makes the other person look so bad you wouldn't vote for him in a heartbeat. And for a lot of people, that's an easy call. But out there in the middle somewhere, there are people who are probably going to be genuinely torn on this thing, who don't like either one of them at all and don't want either one of them to become president of the United States, but will feel like they've got to vote for somebody, and it is going to be a hold-your-nose election. There's no question about it. And it's not going to be pretty. It's going to be ugly, very, very ugly.
Well, I certainly kind of got a feeling when Donald Trump was saying that he's going to be holding a press conference on Monday to talk about the Clintons, and he talked about how their politics of, quote, personal enrichment has been turned into an art form. All I heard was dun-dun-dun. I thought, oh, my goodness, this is the start of the very kind of invective that you're talking about. It's going to get personal. It's going to get dirty. It's going to get nasty really, really fast.
Not just on one side, on both sides, because Hillary left no doubt last night. She's going to go after Donald Trump on a personal basis, and this is going to be mud on all sides right up until Election Day.
I thought it was interesting, Tim, that she didn't mention Bill Clinton in her speech last night. She talked about Chelsea, her daughter, her granddaughter, her mother. Bill's name never came up. Do you think that was an oversight or what?
Nothing that Hillary Clinton does right now is an oversight. Her speech was carefully scripted, carefully planned. She is a very well-prepared candidate. She is exceptionally experienced in the political realm, and nothing she does is a mistake. So they strategically decided that that was something not to do. I don't know why, but that was – everything she does is scripted and poll-tested. She's going to be very, very careful.
My guess about that is that she needs to establish herself firmly as not Bill Clinton's wife, as an independent entity. And by not mentioning him, she wants the focus to be on her and not on Bill. And that's going to be difficult because he's a stage robber. He wants to be out in front. He wants to be in the spotlight.
He's also
and that'll be very difficult to do.
He's also pretty popular in the Democratic Party. I mean, you know, he these days he's kind of a star attraction in a lot of places, and it's going to be a tough tightrope for her, Dan, if that's what she's trying to do, because at the same time she needs his star power, you know. So it's going to be she has to come out from under the connection to her husband, also from being the Secretary of State of Barack Obama, who also is very popular in the Democratic Party right now. So and so she's got two guys who can be surrogates for her going out there and campaigning and being very helpful. But at the same time, she can't let that go too far, because you're right. She's got to establish herself not as Bill Clinton's wife and not as Barack Obama's Secretary of State, but as Hillary Clinton, who's ready to run this country.
Well, speaking of female candidates, Kamala Harris and Loretta Sanchez are going forward to November in a runoff. Gentlemen, quickly, your thoughts on that race. Tim, starting with you. Dan, go ahead.
If it's going to be close at all, if two of them basically split the Democratic vote, it means that independents and Republicans will decide who's the next United States Senator for California. And I think there's several things, several themes here going on. It's part of it is ideology. Loretta Sanchez is marginally less liberal or more conservative than Kamala Harris, probably. There's race, and there's also geography. Loretta Sanchez indicated the other day she wants to make this L.A. versus San Francisco. Why should San Francisco have all the politicians? Why should they have all the Senate seats? Why should they have all these positions, all this political power? Why doesn't Los Angeles and Southern California get a share? That could be a fairly strong motivator in Southern California. It really could be. And so this is going to be a very, very interesting race. It's the first test of the top two system in a statewide contest. And I mean, you could see it coming. None of the Republicans was going along. There were too many of them. Oh, by the way, had the Republicans settled on one candidate, particularly if it were Duff Sundheim, they would have had a pretty good chance of making it into the runoff, not that they have much of a chance of winning in November, but they could have actually had a candidate if they hadn't been so haven't split their relatively small vote among so many different candidates. So they kind of did that to themselves.
You're about 34 total, right? Let's talk about Let's talk to David in San Francisco. He wants to weigh in on the Senate race. David, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I have to agree with Tim that Hillary is totally prepared, and nothing is done without her acute eye. One of the things I wanted to ask about, or at least mention, is that I did do a voter inspector for San Francisco, and the voting ballot this time was so complicated, and the training really did not prepare the inspectors for all the possibilities that were happening with ballots and people that might have been registered independent. And so I think there was some sort of disenfranchisement that happened. But the thing I did want to ask Tim about was that on Monday night, MSNBC was broadcasting from California. And, of course, AP and NBC prematurely announced that Hillary had gone over the top. And that night, Chris Hayes on his show happened to interview Kamala Harris. And as they went into extra hours after the regular hours, her interview played twice. And nowhere on that channel was Loretta Sanchez featured or mentioned. So she got, Kamala Harris got two free interviews on the day before the election, and I kind of thought that MSNBC was tipping the scales a bit. What do you think, Tim?
Well, I think there certainly has been a perception, and maybe I'm biased because I'm from Northern California, but there's definitely been a perception in a lot of the media that Kamala is the presumptive winner, that Kamala Harris is going to be the next United States Senator, and that Loretta Sanchez just hasn't been able to raise the money, get the traction to be a serious contender. So I think part of it is that. Part of it may have just been that, you know, MSNBC had that material and used it. I don't know that with MSNBC's audience, I don't know that that made a huge difference. I do think that Kamala Harris starts off right now as the kind of prohibitive favorite. She's already won a statewide race. She's a very strong candidate. So I think part of what you're seeing is that reflection.
Well, you also said you wrote yesterday on 48 Hills that you got a lot of emails and calls from people who just didn't understand the rules with the no party preference. And this caller talked about the lack of voter education. And is it possible that because Bernie Sanders began to run out of money near the end, that there just wasn't enough money to actually do the kind of voter education that was necessary?
Well, I actually think that the Secretary of State's office, California Secretary of State's office, and local voter registrars and departments of elections, certainly from my perspective in San Francisco, the San Francisco Department of Elections tried, but I don't think there was enough money spent and enough advertising done and enough community outreach to explain the rules. I mean, I think a lot of Sanders voters registered as no party preference because that's their rebellion against the Democratic Party or which they see as corrupt or whatever. But then they got to the polls and they realized, whoa, I'm getting a no party preference ballot. Bernie's not on it, right? Mm-hmm. So because you had to request a Democratic Party ballot. And if you voted by mail, which an increasing number of people do, and you didn't fill out the form that says I want a Democratic Party ballot, you got a no party preference ballot. And if you filled it out and sent it in, it's too late to say, oh, wait, I didn't get to vote for Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton. And then, of course, it came down on the local level where a lot of people who voted no party or registered no party preference who might have been more progressive Democratic voters were unable to vote in the critical race in San Francisco for Democratic County Central Committee. And to vote in that race, you have to be a registered Democrat. So I think a lot of people didn't understand. No party preference is okay in the Democratic primary, but not the Republican primary. Have to be a registered Democrat to vote for Democratic County Central Committee. So I do think, and I heard plenty of reports of confused voters and possibly confused people at the polls who, let's remember, the people working at the polls are, for the most part, essentially volunteers. And, you know, what I was advising people is if you're confused, go down to City Hall and vote there, where there's people who are, you know, who are trained and skilled in the situation. But I don't know that that had a huge impact, but it definitely had an impact.
All right, Tim. And Dan, stand by. We're going to take a break and come right back. We're talking about Election Day in California, and we invite your calls. Stay tuned.
There are many ways you can take part in the conversation on Your Call, on the phone, by sending an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org, or by going to yourcallradio.org website. If you'd like to participate in today's show by phone, call toll-free 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Coming up at 11, it's World Have Your Say from the BBC. Thanks for being with us here on Local Public Radio.
Welcome back. For those of you just joining us, I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. We're podcasting the show, and you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and find out what's coming up next. Speaking of which, tomorrow we'll be talking about free and low-cost events, museums and nature walks and hikes that you and your family can enjoy this summer. And we want to get your suggestions for a good summer staycation idea. And on Friday, it's our weekly media roundtable. And Rose will be speaking with a panel of journalists about the week's news. And if you have a show idea for us, give us a call, drop us a line, yourcallradio.org, or of course, give us a call, 866-798-8255. We've got an email from Glenn, and Glenn says, the phrase of the day is, quote, the first time a woman was nominated to a major party ticket, but he says Jill Stein was nominated in 2012. And Glenn says, just because the U.S. media says that the Green Party isn't a major party doesn't make it so. So do we stand corrected?
I guess so. I mean, the Green Party has at one time in California had much more of inference, certainly in local areas. And there was a time in San Francisco when we had a couple of members of the Board of Supervisors who were Green Party members. Matt Gonzalez came within a whisker of getting elected mayor of San Francisco as a Green Party member. But it, you know, and I say this with all due respect to the Green Party, and I am a great believer that it shouldn't just be two political parties out there. It seems to have faded a good bit in its influence in California.
There are certainly some interesting other races and ballot measures to talk about. But, of course, everybody is really wrapped up in the presidential race. So Antonio from San Leandro wants to weigh in on that. Hi, Antonio. Welcome.
Hi. Yes. Well, my opinion is that from the beginning, Bernie Sanders was just a sparring partner for Hillary Clinton. They put Bernie Sanders there to keep the periphery of the Democratic Party tied to the center, and he kept going on, and they were happy. Even Hillary Clinton said that she was happy with the debate and the different ideas, and that was his role. We know that Bernie Sanders has been feeding from the public trough for more than three decades, and he had no principle. He was democratic socialist, then was independent, and then now Democrat. What kind of principle that man has?
Well, Dan, that is a question that has been posed, given that Bernie Sanders isn't a Democrat. What allegiance should he have for the Democratic Party and its future?
Well, he isn't a Democrat, I guess. Actually, I don't think Donald Trump was a Republican for a long time either, for that matter. But he has caucused with the Democrats in the Senate, so he's kind of an ersatz Democrat, mm-hmm. I should say. But that's, Yeah, actually, in practical terms, that's neither here nor there. I mean, he has adherents. He does represent a block of voters. They're voters that certainly Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party want to go their way. They don't want him to stay home. They want him to go. They want him to vote for Hillary Clinton. So he is a figure in this thing, whether he's a registered Democrat or not. He is a player in that game, for sure.
Well, I'm certain he would take issue with the whole idea that he was just a warm-up act or a sparring partner for Hillary, but it sort of seems that way. He's certainly impacted her positions, I think.
Well, he did impact her positions, but he also kind of was a foil for her in a way to say, hey, that's that crazy old guy over on the corner. You know, don't vote for him, vote for me.
True. Let's go to Diamond in San Francisco. Welcome, Diamond.
Yeah, to Diamond Dave, two things came to me this morning connected. Number one, I'd like to see Bernie step up and have a manifesto and be sure to encourage all of his delegates, of which he has many, to come to Philadelphia to help shape the Democratic Party's future, Democratic Socialist. Number two, I'm going to be at the Rainbow Gathering in the Green Mountains of Vermont, and we're going to be caravanning down to feed the people with food, not bombs, during the convention on the outside. And I'd like to see a resurrection. Tim, you know I was part of it before. A resurrection of the Occupy spirit. Should we call it Occupy Liberty or Occupy Philly? So we'll be on the outside, and Occupy while the convention's going on. And if Bernie wants to step out from the convention and join us in the plaza, in the square, that would be a good thing. But what I'm talking about, outside, inside. Whatever, outside, inside, I plan to be there, and I'm encouraging others. It's a time for a resurrection of Occupy.
All right. Thanks a lot, Diamond. So let's talk about some of the other races, too. What are some of the ones that you think were standouts, Tim?
Well, I've been paying attention to San Francisco, and one of the big surprises in San Francisco was how close the race between Jane Kim and Scott Wiener for state senate is. I mean, in San Francisco, it was a very good night for the progressives. And, the Wiener camp was talking about how they expected a double-digit lead. Now, remember, it's a top-two primary, so the two will run against each other again in November. But it was really important how they turn out in the primary, because if Scott Wiener was ahead by 10, 12 points, it would be hard for Jane Kim to go out and raise a lot of money and tell people, hey, there's a chance I'm going to win. And they were very confident. Scott Wiener got in the race a year earlier and had three times the amount of money. And yet, at this point, it's like 2 percentage points. It's almost a tie. And as the Election Day absentees come in, that could tighten up even more. So that was a big surprise, the strength that Jane Kim brought to this. And I think that was a function of the strong progressive turnout in San Francisco and the fact that she was endorsed by Bernie Sanders in the last couple of weeks. And she really played on that. She showed up with him in a couple of rallies. So that puts that race very much in play in November. That is going to be a very, very close contest with both sides working really, really hard. But, again, Jane Kim, 2 percentage points down in a time when the turnout was around 40% in San Francisco, the turnout's going to be significantly higher in November. People are going to come out to vote against Donald Trump or vote for Hillary Clinton, but it's going to be and so that's a big surprise.
She even seemed surprised herself, actually.
A bit surprised. At about 9:45, before the real results started coming in, I talked to Jane Kim and I said, "What's a victory for you tonight?" And she said, 5 points. If we're within 5 points, that is a victory. And she was within two. So I think, that is going to be a defining race in San Francisco this fall.
Dan, let's talk a minute about Prop 50. Legislators.
I'm not sure it's worth a minute, but go ahead.
Yeah, just kind of breeze on through that one for us, we're clear. It used to be that legislators could be suspended, but their benefits weren't. This would allow the legislature to terminate those salaries and benefits if the legislators are suspended.
Yeah, and that comes out of the fact that a couple of years ago we had three state senators, Democratic state senators, I might add, under indictment at the same time, and they could suspend them, but they had to keep paying their salaries. This allows them to suspend them and not pay their salaries. It's an image polisher for the state senate, let's put it that way, or for the legislature as a whole. ironically, the measure came onto the ballot simultaneously, virtually, with one former legislator pleading guilty to taking bribes, while his brother remains, it's awaiting trial for taking bribes. also a state senator. The brother is a state senator. So, yeah, it's kind of to polish up their image a little bit and not be embarrassed if this ever happens again, which it may never happen again. I also want to say one thing about something that's very, very important that happened or in the process of happening and part of what yesterday. That was the ongoing perpetual battle between business interests and the four major liberal groups, environmentalists, labor unions, consumer advocates, and trial lawyers. All of whom, they have their agendas. The business tries to kill their agendas. They label some of their bills job killers. And out in the electoral arena, the business community has been using the top two primary system very effectively to build a block of moderate Democrats in the legislature that has allowed business to stave off most of the bills that it doesn't like. And a lot of the contests, particularly in the East Bay area, Contra Costa, Solano, Napa counties, were battles between business-backed Democrats and the more liberal Democrats. And they're setting all this up. The idea of the business, get your guy in there or your woman in there so that they can get into the runoff in November. And in the runoff in November, then Republicans and independents could have the margin of victory. This has been very effective for the business community over the last two election cycles, and it looks like it's shaping up to be another one this year. That's real politics. That's down in the trenches. What's going to pass in the legislature? What's not going to pass in the legislature? These kind of outcomes really decide the product that comes out of the Capitol in the long run, or doesn't come out, as the case may be.
Tim, you wanted to weigh in?
Yeah, I think that's what we saw in San Francisco, where a lot of money, big money, went in from the business community to try to elect Scott Wiener. And it was not as effective as they expected. And there's a very good chance that Jane Kim may be able to fight that off. And that will be a counterexample to what Dan is talking about. I agree, the top two primary has given the big business interests a chance to try to push more moderate Democrats, and it will be interesting to see if the opposite happens in San Francisco this fall.
Sondre Swanson came in second too. That was a surprise. Yes.
Yep. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, Sondre had a lot of support, but again, you know, the electorate in November is going to be different from the electorate in June, particularly I think because some number of people who were the more left, progressive, liberal Sanders supporters may have given up when it was announced the day before the election that Hillary was already the winner. The turnout in San Francisco, as I say, was around 40%. We expected more than that. It's definitely going to be 10, 15 points higher. So there will be a very different electorate. There will be people who didn't vote in the primary who will be voting in the general election, and that will affect all of these races.
Okay, let's take another phone call. This one is William in Belvedere. Good morning, William.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm a Green Party member, although I changed my registration temporarily in order to vote in the Democrat primary. And I'd like to point out that because of the distribution between Democrats and Republicans in California, where...
William, before you go on, just turn your radio down for me.
It is not.
Okay, good.
The Republicans will never carry California in a presidential election. And if people want to send a message to the Democrats about the kind of direction they want the Democrats to pursue, they can, by voting green, send that message without having any realistic likelihood that it's going to cause Trump to carry California. And because of the Electoral College system, as we all know, if you get one more vote than if the Democrats even just were to get one more vote than the Republicans, all of the electoral votes will go to the Democrats. So I would urge people to consider sending a message to the Democrats about the direction they want them to pursue by voting green in the presidential election.
Tim or Dan, either of you want to weigh in on that one?
I don't think it's going to have much practical effect, to tell you the truth. Even if that occurred, I think that it's the message would not be received, let's put it that way. The only thing that counts to the folks in Washington is, do you win or do you lose? Messages, subliminal messages, as it were, probably are not going to take effect.
You know, it's interesting. There's been a lot of debate in the last few years on the left in California and in other places about this very topic, and there's been a lot written about it. Is it more effective to go what my friend, the writer Tom Gallagher says, the primary route? He's written a book about this, the primary route, which is essentially what Bernie did, to say, okay, we're going to move the Democratic Party to the left by joining the Democratic Party and entering the primaries and doing what Bernie did, or is it more effective to try to organize the Green Party as a third party and put pressure on the Democrats that way? It's an ongoing debate, and I think the fact that Bernie Sanders was as successful as he was says that there is some value to doing it that way.
Let's go to Mike in Berkeley. Good morning, Mike.
Question about the AP decision.
Turn your radio down, Mike.
Oh, it's off.
Okay.
I just had a question about the AP decision to basically call the election before the election was finished. I'm wondering who controls the AP, and was this kind of a happenstance, what's the AP agenda?
I don't think the AP has, well, you know, everybody has an agenda. There's been a lot of discussion about this, and AP normally doesn't respond to these kinds of questions and political questions from journalists, but in this case they actually have. And what the folks at the AP said, and those of us who are journalists can certainly understand this, although I disagree with it, AP said, hey, we report the news, and we had a scoop. We had surveyed every single one of the superdelegates. We had done our very careful homework, and we demonstrated that Hillary Clinton had the number that she needed to go over the top. Why would we not report that if it's news? It's the same argument that we've had in the past. Why would we not report exit polls showing how an election is going to turn out before the polls have closed? After that happened with Carter and Reagan in 1980, most of the networks and most of the big news outlets agreed that they would stop doing that, that they would not project a winner in any state until the polls in that state had closed, just as a matter of responsibility. So this is in the journalism world, this is a very controversial thing that AP did.
And it remains so. But they did the same thing when they were able to determine that Donald Trump had actually gotten the number of delegates that he needed. And it came as a surprise even to Donald Trump. As I recall, he was in North Dakota when AP announced, and he was like in a basement of a veterans hall or something somewhere with those delegates from North Dakota. And he put them behind him saying, these are the delegates that have put me over the top. So it wasn't even a big announcement, because basically AP stole the thunder. And so in effect, Dan, what do you think, that AP was just trying to make news of its own, that they were just interested in a scoop?
No, I think that's exactly right. Their attitude is, we have these facts, why shouldn't we report them? I think there's a difference, a subtle perhaps, but important difference between not reporting on an exit poll, which is an extrapolation, and reporting on a hard delegate count, which is hard, and that's a different thing, and you can't really equate the two. I think the AP did the right thing. I think that they did the work, they pinned them down, they reported what they found out. If there's anybody to be faulted in this, it's the superdelegates who committed themselves before the convention. Talk about jumping the gun. They've committed themselves before the convention. And having committed themselves before the convention and thereby pushing Hillary Clinton over the top, they can't very well complain that somebody reported that. They did it. They didn't have to do it. They did it. It was only the AP reporting what they did, which is to push Hillary over the top.
And it also kind of gave quarter to those who say, the media, they've done it again. They've undermined the vote and, the media again. The media.
Look, everybody hates the media. And I want to tell you, one of my own personal problems with both of these presidential candidates is they both hate the media, and they let that be known all the time. Hillary Clinton almost never has a press conference. Trump denounces the media all the time. And to have our profession dissed this way by two presidential candidates, I want to tell you, is extremely off-putting to me on a personal level. I don't like both of them for that reason.
Yeah, you know, I can say Hillary Clinton certainly can complain that for many, many years she's been attacked in the media. Donald Trump, I think, is just a kind of a blowhard about this. He doesn't like anyone saying anything critical about him at all. So, you know, I mean, the bottom line, I think, is that the news media exists. And even in this day when social media and other forms of communication are becoming very effective, the news media are going to be out there. Reporters are going to be asking questions. And I don't think it's very effective. I think it's kind of dumb for any candidate for office anywhere to go after the news media because it doesn't work. It's not very effective. I mean, Donald Trump thinks that it's going to rev up his troops to say that the media is after him. But in the end, those are the people who are going to be covering his campaign.
Well, Bernie Sanders is kind of notorious for stiff-arming the media, too. He just doesn't like the press.
And I might add, the Obama White House has probably been the least communicative White House in terms of the media and the White House press corps of any recent president. I mean, this is a very bad trend as far as I'm concerned.
Let's go to an email. We have an email from Mia in San Francisco, and Mia says, I was a registered NPP and was lucky enough to open my ballot about 3 weeks before the election in time to change my status to Democrat so I could vote on the full ballot. My neighbor was not so lucky. This past Saturday, she went down to City Hall to the Department of Elections to vote. She asked for a crossover ballot, and they told her she could not have one because she had missed the May 23rd deadline. This meant that she could not vote in the local DCCC race. We pressed the elections official and told him how confusing the process was for voters and that we felt the Department of Elections and the registrar had dropped the ball. We decided to register a complaint form. During the 20 minutes we spent at a side desk, five people approached the main desk with the exact same issue. They were confused about their ballots and why they didn't have the DCCC ballot. So clearly that has been...
It was definitely a factor. It was, frankly, it's confusing. It took me a while. I've been doing this for 30 years. It took me a while to figure out. I actually emailed the director of elections in San Francisco when I wrote about this and said, okay, John, let me run down what I think is the case. Will you explain whether... And he came back and said, actually, no, you're a little bit off here and you're a little bit off. It was hard to understand that you can vote in the Democratic primary for president without being a Democrat, but you can't vote in the local race for the Democratic County Central Committee without being a Democrat, and you can't change it at the last minute. There was a deadline. A lot of us, you know, you can blame the media, but a lot of us, including your call, Rose and I did a show a couple weeks ago where we talked about this at length, that this is the deadline coming up. If you want to vote as a Democrat, you've got to register by this deadline. I put this out. KPFA put it out. I know a lot of the news media has been trying to educate people, but it was hard because the rules are complicated and we couldn't get through to everybody.
And they tried to extend the deadline, too, unsuccessfully.
Unsuccessfully.
The Sanders people, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you want to weigh in on that, Dan?
Well, I would say that yes, that was all very confusing. I know personally people got very confused by it. I know one woman who was an independent, wanted to vote for Sanders and was told that she had to re-register as a Democrat to do it, which she didn't have to do. But she wound up re-registering. And as a result of that, by the way, started getting calls from the campaigns after that re-registration. But yeah, it's confusing. Let me add one more factor to it. Having the top two ballot in this mixture also is confusing because the presidential part of the ballot was a partisan thing. You had to be a Republican to vote on the Republican side. You had to be a Democrat or an independent requesting a special ballot to vote on the Democratic side. But all the other things that were on the ballot, except for the local central committee stuff, of course, was everybody's in the pool. So Democrats and Republicans were all in the same ballot. It is a very, very confusing ballot for that reason. And to have 34 Senate candidates on your ballot even added more confusion to the whole thing. So I don't know if there's a solution to any of this because the parties make their own rules about who can vote and who can't vote in these presidential elections. But surely there must be a better way than there is that it's going on right now. It was actually cleaner on the Republican side because if you weren't a Republican, you couldn't vote in the presidential thing. The Democrats, by allowing the independents to vote, created a lot of confusion, and particularly when you add things like the central committees and things like that, it is kind of a mess.
Any reason to think this will carry over to November?
Well, it'll be much simpler in November.
You won't have the
differential at the presidential level. Basically, everybody will get the same ballot, and that will make it really quite much easier than this primary ballot.
Mm-hmm. Can I just say one thing, since we're talking about the county central committees? This is usually a sleeper of a race. I mean, you know, people generally think, oh, the county central committee, you sit around and set policy for the local Democratic Party. But in San Francisco, this was a huge deal with huge gobs of money, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars being spent by the pro-business, the more conservative, some would say moderate, I would say more conservative Democrats, to hold on to control of the local party. And we're still not 100% sure, but it looks like they may have failed. It looks like the progressives in San Francisco may have enough votes to take back control of the local Democratic Party, which would be, again, a very significant thing, being as they were outspent by a factor of probably 5 or 6 to 1.
Dan, could you please take a moment and talk about something that really is only impactful in San Francisco, but we certainly have kept up with the events with the San Francisco Police Department. In San Francisco, Prop D would require the Office of Citizen Complaints to investigate any incident that occurs within the city limits if a police officer discharges a firearm, as opposed to even if no one files a complaint, any discharge of a weapon would automatically trigger an investigation by the OCC. I assume that you think it's probably in response to what's been happening in the city in recent months?
Well, it's been happening all over the country. Obviously, there's a great, much higher sensitivity to police shootings of any kind than there once was, and you're seeing a lot of bills in the state legislature. I don't have much knowledge of this local issue. I mean, there are literally hundreds of local ballot measures all over the state. But it certainly is one of those kind of visceral issues that's arisen out of mostly, I think, what's happened in large measure in other states, but to a certain degree also in the San Francisco Bay Area and in Southern California. There's a heightened sensitivity to police use of violent force, and it's inevitable that it's going to be politicized. I can't comment on the San Francisco because I didn't even know it was on the ballot until you just told me. So I really can't do it. So you've explored the reaches of my ignorance here. But it is an issue, and it's an issue that goes way beyond San Francisco, and something I think we have not heard the last time.
That's why I thought I'd bring it up. It certainly has national implications. Thank you so much. We're going to leave it there. We've been talking today with Dan Walters, a columnist with the Sacramento Bee, and with Tim Redmond here with me in the studio. I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. Please join us tomorrow. This is Your Call. On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about free and low-cost events for your summer. Museums, nature walks, and hikes that you and your family can enjoy. Best bets for your staycation. That's on the next Your Call with Renee Kemp and you.